Okay, a spoiler alert. Well, to win the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show Obedience Championship, you got to have heart, right? Well, that's a Labrador Retriever named Heart, and handler Linda Brennan won the competition today for the third year in a row. That's every year the contest has been held. About two dozen dogs competed in the event, which is a sight to see. It includes an elaborate six-minute routine from each dog. Gotta love a lab. This is Town Hall News.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hello, my darlings, and welcome back to Radio Wasteland. I'm your host, Chauncey Hallworth, and this is my other host, Sean.
Hello.
And we talk to you about things like the paranormal and rampant Sasquatchery.
Which does not fall under the category of the paranormal.
Sasquatch doesn't?
No, it does. I'm just making
just rampant it. Sasquatchery doesn't?
Right.
I see.
Yeah. I do like that. I like that phrase there.
Yeah, that'll be the spinoff show.
Yeah.
As you can maybe tell, I'm a little hoarse, and I'm actually one of the, when I was little, I wanted to be the sound effects guy for cartoons. I was like way obsessed with Mel Blanc, and I wanted to make sound effects, and one of the ones that I can do is make a hoarse sound, but I can't do it
when you're hoarse.
When I'm a little hoarse.
That's...
I'm going to try though. All right.
Okay.
So this might not be good.
We've got nothing to lose.
All right.
Oh, God.
No, it went all pterodactyl.
No. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all right. No, it's not happening. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So big news this week is the Olympics. You've been watching the Olympics, Sean?
I watched a little bit of figure skating with my mom.
With your mom? That seems to be a pastime of a lot of families, figure skating with the mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty impressive. I mean,
I can't
go on record and say, like, oh, I'm too cool for figure skating or anything.
Oh, totally. I would totally break an ankle. You know, there was a bit of controversy in the news this morning about Adam Rippon not scoring as high as others, even though he skated flawlessly. But I read the article that was basically saying he wasn't doing the difficult stuff the other guys were doing.
Right, which is weird. That it's a controversy, because I heard the announcers talking at the time, and I thought that was kind of a given, that
he replaced
the quadruple whatevers with the triple things.
Well,
axles.
I think he has a lot of support because he, you know, is openly gay, and I think that there's a big community out there who are supporting him because of that.
Hmm.
And so they're thinking maybe he's getting knocked down, for one, for being American. So half of our country is probably thinking he's getting knocked down because he's an American, and the other half is probably thinking he's getting knocked down maybe for being gay.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I personally watch a lot of this stuff, and I definitely thought that the Koreans coming in together was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I assume you heard about this.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, even if you don't watch the Olympics, that's, like, interesting from a political geopolitics perspective type thing. So
yeah, I had somebody telling me that they felt that the Koreans coming in together meant that they were totally allied and that we no longer had our connection over there, but I didn't really feel that that was the case.
I think that's reading a little bit into it.
I mean, you know,
the Olympics is all about the cheesy symbolic stuff. That's kind of the whole point of it. So
it's
like, I doubt any big trade policy is going to get hashed out over it.
Right.
They're not going to end the Olympics and be like, oh, and by the way, North Korea and us, we've been talking and we've decided to end the fighting or whatever.
Right.
And get rid of all the machine gun nests and we're one country again.
Right. Like,
that's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen either. I think if any shadiness is going on, it's probably that the North Koreans know that the United States is backing off during the Olympics mm-hmm. and maybe trying to get a little bit of sway of support in the meantime.
Yeah.
You know, which, you know, smart move, but I don't think it's going to make much difference.
Well, I am generally cynical and averse to, like, cheesiness, but I have to say just the Olympics in general, and I don't watch it a lot, but just the idea of it, all these nations coming together and just competing in a friendly way,
yeah.
is always kind of like, aw.
Yeah, it is.
You know,
it
that's just, it's so nice.
Yeah.
really, and every time it happens, I feel like, for however long it goes on, just, you know, a little bit more optimistic about practically everything. So.
And I think it's good for patriotism as well. Yeah. You know, I think that that people, regardless of what side you're on politically and so on and so forth, we're all rooting for yeah. the American to win because, you know, we don't want
exactly
those lousy other countries to win. I also found the Russians to be interesting.
I haven't heard much about this.
Okay, so they're coming in as the, like, United Athletes of Russia. They're not okay. coming in as the Russians. Because of the doping scandals over the past couple Olympics, part of their punishment was that they can't compete as a country, and any medals they win will not go to their country's tally.
Oh. Huh.
But any of the Russian athletes who were able to pass all the tests were still allowed to compete in the Olympics for medals for themselves. And so that's why they're marching under an Olympic flag. And they came in wearing gray jackets.
Hmm.
And, you know, the article I was reading is just all, oh, they're wearing gray jackets and not representing their country. And I'm like, well, you know, gray jacket does kind of represent Russia.
that
you know?
Is true.
But it's a little dystopian.
Even so, know? I can't imagine there's that much precedent for that. I was unaware of this, and this is
oh yeah yeah no they
big,
not
actually.
They not only verified that they had been doing it, but they verified that they had done it in London as well.
Right.
And so yeah, they definitely got
yeah
smacked down for yeah, that.
It's pretty severe.
Yeah. But I definitely love the Olympics. I watched the one last night where it was the first American to ever medal in the luge.
Hmm. Yeah.
And the luge is without a doubt one of the craziest sports ever.
Yes.
Because I don't know how to say this in a radio-friendly sort of way, but whether you're a man or a woman, you're going down this thing at extreme speeds with your most sensitive parts going first. You know, that's terrifying.
This
in bobsledding, you're at least in the fetal position. You know, you can be under the illusion that you're going to tuck and roll or something, you know, but not in the luge. You know, if somebody throws a 2x4 in there, we're done.
So every so often at, like, water parks and stuff, you know, every so often there'll be a tragedy when someone misuses the inner tubes or something and goes down a slide in the wrong way and dies or something or gets really badly hurt.
Right.
And luge is just like, if someone saw that and was just like, what if that was a sport?
Right.
So,
yeah.
So yeah, luge is hardcore.
Yeah, and I mean, Winter Olympics in general is hardcore stuff, you know,
yeah.
without a doubt.
All right. Well, there was the Olympics. We were talking beforehand about SpaceX a little bit, and that's another huge thing that's been in the news. I just wanted to say those two boosters touching down simultaneously was ridiculous.
Surreal. Absolutely surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah. I find that, you know, it really kind of goes with the Olympics because I find it incredibly inspiring
mm-hmm.
on a humanity level. But a lot of flat earthers apparently were complaining that it's a big hoax. And I got to say, if there was any part of that that was fake, those two rockets landing was like, that looked like a science fiction movie from the 60s. I'm
yes,
just all, I didn't even know this was possible, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, so we have a guest tonight.
Oh.
Our guest is Stephen Bassett from Paradigm Research Group. And we're going to be talking UFOs. We've had a lot of UFOs this year since we switched years.
Yeah. Well, there was that big UFO revelation in December, and I think we're just
yeah
we're catching up still. This guy's a big deal. I'm really excited.
I am excited, too. All right, you're listening to Radio Wasteland. When we come back, we're going to get on the phone Stephen Bassett from the Paradigm Research Group.
Yeah, he'll stop. I have the right-of-way. Or really. Alan Gordon here, Coachmaster Collision Repair. Don't count on it. He or she might be texting, changing the station on the radio, or breaking up a fight in the back seat. Don't take that chance. Lives are at stake. Distracted driving is a danger to us all. You can be proactive in preventing an accident. There's not much you can do when you're sitting in your car and they back into your door. If this happens to you, come see us. We're located at the south end of East Side Road just before Girvan. With your claim number, we can handle your entire claim process. Our quality repairs and friendly service will have you recommending Coachmaster to all your friends and family. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry, serving the Reading community since 1969. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Stephen Bassett from the Paradigm Research Group. We got you there with us, Stephen.
Yes, I am.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine.
So I'm really kind of excited about this show, but I'm going to start with kind of the boring stuff that I'm sure you've answered 1,000 times, but it'll be new and exciting to our users. Can you explain to us a little bit of what the Paradigm Research Group is and what you guys do there?
It's a political activist organization. The name is a little confusing, but it was set up when I registered as a lobbyist with Congress on the ET issue back in 96. And I signed up to represent a number of groups that were researching the subject. So it's called the Paradigm Research Group, but it's a political activist organization. And it has one primary goal, and that is to end, used to be called the UFO cover-up, which I
have come to prefer to call the truth embargo. And then with the announcement to the American people, a very simple idea to the American people by the President of the United States that there's an extraterrestrial presence engaging us, has been for some time, and they have been denied that information for national security reasons, but now we're telling you. That's it. That's the capital D disclosure. After that, well, things will get quite interesting.
Well, personally, I do not find the name to be all that misleading. I mean, when you know what it's about yeah. switching the paradigm, so it totally fits.
It would be a large paradigm shift there, yeah.
Right, so...
Well, yeah, no, I got the paradigm in there. That's the word of the century. I mean, if you can't spell paradigm, you're going to have a problem.
Right.
A lot of people can't.
So you lobby. So you're basically physically going down and confronting our representatives, saying, hey, we need this to happen?
I've done that, but again, political activism takes all manner of forms. So PRG has done all kinds of things. It's met with people on the Hill, but Capitol Hill in Congress right now has not been for some time particularly useful.
Right. Yeah.
I also hold conferences, lobby the media. Has had multiple projects. So it's using whatever would help advance the activist movement. And like any major activist movement, there are many moving parts. And that's the nature of it for the last 21 years. So lobbying is really just a small part.
I have to admit, though, I'm really curious about the response you get from lobbying. When you walk in there, are you getting people laughing you out? Are you getting them denying it with a wink? What kind of response are you getting from these politicians?
I have never been laughed out or gotten that kind of response by anyone I was meeting with directly. I don't know what people do privately, but...
Right.
Yeah. She was pretty mature, relatively mature, by the time I got involved in 96. So, and I'm, again, I'm suit, tie, all the usual stuff. This doesn't happen much. And even less now. I mean, the issue is way mature now. So,
yeah.
But even by 96, the number of people that knew that ET presence was real was extremely large. That doesn't mean that they were going to talk about it to their friends, co-workers, certainly do something formally about it in the open. But privately, they knew. And so the whole embargo and ridicule program that had been underway since the 1950s was already losing its steam at that point. And now doesn't happen very often, but it does happen on occasion. But there's always going to be some people that are the last to know.
Right.
So this must be a pretty auspicious time to be you then, what with all the stuff yeah. coming out last December about UFO programs and so forth. I have to think that you're seeing your goal as being probably closer than it ever has.
There have been some times over the last 20 years when things look good. And I've talked about that. And if you're an activist and things are starting to go that way, then you tend to really project that. And there have been times when I thought that it could happen pretty soon, and I gave reasons for that. And there have been times when it was just not moving forward at all. And that's the nature of major activist movements. Mm-hmm. When you're trying to convince the government to do something it doesn't want to do on a very large level, it is very difficult. But right now, I would say what I'm seeing is unprecedented, and if things continue at the pace that they're on right now, I don't see how the truth embargo can make it through the year. I've been wrong before on that, and things can happen. History can throw some real big curveballs your way.
Oh, totally. Topic deflection, I'm sure, is a big one, and we're sitting on the cusp of a lot of potentially deflecting topics.
Oh, all the time. I mean, any time. Right. And it usually has something to do with somebody blowing something up.
Right.
Most
yeah.
of the time, that's what it's involved in.
Yeah, the louder it is, the better, I guess.
That's right. But this year looks extremely promising. And I'm encouraging people to pay close attention. They go to my website, paradigmresearchgroup.org. They can sign up for PRG's updates, and I send out periodic updates about what's going down.
So I'm a little curious about the media's role in this. Do you feel, I'm sure we feel that the media is suppressing this, but do you think they're suppressing this under order, or do you think they're suppressing this out of not believing it because of actions that the government has done? Like, I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but do you think the media doesn't believe it, or do you think they're denying it out of being ordered to deny it?
This is a very complex question. The truth embargo, which is 70 years on now, roughly, is a very complex and significant thing. A policy of the United States government to do something that I'm amazed they pulled it off. And I think they probably are too. But in order to prevent the American people, mainly American society, from knowing, formally knowing, that there's an extraterrestrial presence, they had to jump through a lot of hoops.
Right.
And without question, that one of the big hoops was the media had to be contained. It had to be limited somehow. And it started way back. The early years would have been very important. Initially, they didn't have anything like they're facing now. It's 1947 to 1953.
And this is off Roswell. We're considering the start of this.
We'll start with Roswell.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll start with the sighting burst that occurred in early 47, of course, the Roswell event and so forth. Mm-hmm. There are three television networks. They do 15 minutes of news a night. Mm-hmm. They're new. They're under FCC control. They have to have access to the airways, but those airways are people's airways. And there's radio, but not exactly a lot of news on radio either. People get their news in that era from newspapers.
Right.
The newspaper in their town. And if you live in a small town, they got a tiny little newspaper. But then that newspaper will pick up articles or information through the wires, like UPI, AP, and so forth. So a national-type story will get covered in the major papers, New York Times, Times, and so forth, Washington Post, and then picked up by the AP, and then it'll get picked up by these other papers. So the first thing you had to do at that time was to get with the publishers of the major papers and get them on board. And if you got them on board, just that was probably enough to provide a lot of containment of the issue and prevent it from picking up picking up speed and becoming a problem for them.
Because there's a definite bottleneck there.
Yeah, you have to consider the time. I mean, the truth embargo starts to get formulated between 47 and 52. It gets real serious 53. During that period, this is right after World War II. The United States was preeminent. The military was very well considered by the American people, obviously. You had a five-star general, president.
Yeah, and an economic boom going on.
Economic boom. And so Eisenhower or his people go to the publishers of the Times or the whatever, these major papers, and says, in the interest of national security, we don't want this subject to be covered much. We want it to be limited because we don't want this to develop.
And during World War II, they'd have been used to following orders.
Exactly. They already been, they've been doing that. They've been helping out. This is all national security. And then, of course, remember, in 50, the Korean War gets underway. So between 50 and 55, roughly, we're actually in a war footing with the communists, not just anyone, but with communists, those bad commies. And so it just would not have been difficult. We have no record of this. No memoirs have emerged from any of these publishers or major editors as to what might have been said. I can assure you that there was no paper trail you know, they weren't exchanging letters. They would send probably, they probably sent people out to meet with them on behalf of the president. So it's, it was easy to get going, in my view. History, hopefully, will find out the details.
1 second there. Stephen, we're coming up on our first commercial break. We have a lot more questions to ask you. You're listening to Stephen Bassett from the Paradigm Research Group here on Radio Wasteland. Come on back.
The value of banking local comes in being able to walk into the lobby, see the president, and be called by your first name, knowing that lending decisions are made locally by people you call neighbor or serve alongside when supporting a worthy cause. There's confidence in knowing that when you place your trust in Cornerstone Community Bank, you not only help yourself, you support the town you call home. Stop by one of our Reading or Red Bluff branches or visit us online at bankcornerstone.com. Cornerstone Community Bank. We invite you to experience how we are moving local dreams forward.
Spring is right around the corner. If you're looking for a change or just want to freshen up, Finders Keepers is your unique upscale home consignment boutique. Whether you're looking for a classic, contemporary, or modern-day style, Finders Keepers has quality, name brand, and interesting items. Specializing in home furnishings including wall art, kitchen, and home decor. Located at 2235 Hilltop Drive across from C.R. Gibbs and now open in Chico on the Skyway next to Batteries Plus. Shop online at finderskeepersreading.com.
Analog living in a digital world. Every week on Boomer Tech Radio, we offer up the latest tech news you can use. Hi, it's Bob Belongi. It's even easier to listen to the show now that we're on iTunes. You'll find our archives and articles at BoomerTechRadio.com, and the show is streamed live at KCNR1460.com. We review the latest goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, and make sure you are up to date on the latest tech trend. Boomer Tech Radio, Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. on KCNR 1460, and now available as a podcast on iTunes.
The Ten Tenors are coming to the Reading Civic Auditorium March 16th with their acclaimed show, Wish You Were Here, a celebration of legends featuring the music of David Bowie, Prince, Amy Winehouse, John Lennon, Michael Jackson, Freddie Mercury, Whitney Houston, and more. Fresh off their 20th anniversary world tour, the Ten Tenors return with their show, Wish You Were Here. With over 700 sold-out shows, six albums that have gone platinum and gold, it's the Ten Tenors. Don't miss your opportunity to experience this international singing sensation live at the Reading Civic Auditorium. Get your tickets for this soon-to-be-sold-out show, the Ten Tenors, March 16th. Go to ReadingCivic.com for your tickets today. Tickets are also available at the Civic box office or by calling 229-0022.
Black Bear Diner was started by a couple of hungry guys with a big dream. That dream? Good old-fashioned family food with great service. Like the classic Volcano Breakfast. Secret recipes, sweet cream pancakes, hickory smoked bacon, sausage, and fresh cracked eggs. Mmm. Served day or night at over 100 Black Bear Diner locations. Feeding all you hungry bears out there makes us so proud.
Here's your breakfast for dinner. No more coffee?
Thanks, Rosie. I'm sorry. Pancakes at sunset make me a little emotional.
If you're looking into a remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio, there's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite and Things.
This is Carl Bott. Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days while Linda and I went on vacation. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of The Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite and Things. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard, Estate Granite and Things, or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest Stephen Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group, and we are talking about disclosure. Before the break, we were talking about how the government and the media represses this information. But
the truth embargo.
The truth embargo. Yeah, I like that term. But I'd like to know why. Why are they repressing it? Why are they so hell-bent on repressing it?
This would have been viewed, I think, quite clearly as one of the gravest, most significant national security matters ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the United States had plenty of experience with national security matters. The war was over. Nuclear technology was now in place. There was a potential for another world war that would be with the Soviet Union, clearly. And the Soviet Union had nuclear weapons, or was going to. They knew this. They knew this by 47. So the world looks like it's about to get really dangerous, and suddenly they not only have sightings and these things turning up around the world, but they have a crashed vehicle, at least one, probably more than one, between 1947 and 52. So they now know that there's other civilizations. They don't know what they want, what they're capable of. They've got technology, which could have huge implications. Don't know if the Russians have crashes, vehicles as well. They're facing an enormous question mark. Huge. And as far as they were concerned, the national security implications overrode the public's right to know. It wasn't even a close call for them. And so, from the beginning, it was until we know more, until we understand this, until we understand that what the Soviets might have. This must not become public knowledge. And so they begin this process of containment. And as I mentioned, they get the papers online, and then it gives them a bit of a break. And during that period, they start to humiliate the issue and undermine it and what have you, and deny it and so forth, and get that meat kind of going. And so as media starts to develop, by the time media starts to expand in the United States, and we now get more television news and radio news, what have you, then they've already tainted the issue, and less people want to touch it. And now, I don't think in 1947-50 that the Pentagon, the new CIA, the new NSA, and all of these national security people, which are part of a complex that was growing like a weed, I mean, it was just expanding at the same time, which helped the truth embargo, because you got more and more resources coming into what we call the secret empire. I think they probably...
I wonder if the government just cut this off.
I do not think...
Oh, wait.
Stephen,
you're cutting out.
I am cutting out?
Yeah.
Let me move my mic a little bit. I am on Skype coming in. You Skype the phone. Is that better?
Yeah, that seems better.
Okay.
That sounded exactly like some G-men got to you.
Yeah, yeah.
We were all right.
They break in. You just keep the tape. So
let me throw this out there real quick before we continue with that. You're bringing up the Russians prompted the question back to the media topic. Are these other countries like Russia now involved with the truth embargo?
The rest of the world is going along with the truth embargo. Our allies, all of our allies, from World War II, I mean, that's hardly surprising. A lot of countries out there are just sort of out of the loop. Let's just say that they're just not in the game, but them aside.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we've got two major counter powers in the world, have been early on, Soviet Union and Communist China. And Communist China and Soviet Union elected to not bring this out. They elected that they weren't going to inform their people, possibly for similar reasons, but the reasons were certainly different than Canada or the United Kingdom.
Hmm.
But they chose not to do it. So, and they could have. I mean, this could have easily been out long ago from one of the leaders of the Soviet Union or China, but they didn't do it, which then helped to ensure that this truth embargo would ultimately become institutionalized. And once it becomes institutionalized, it virtually has a life of its own. And the best way to think about institutionalized worldview or institutionalized me is think of like North Korea. the North Korean ruling family has been there so long that it's been through several generations, meaning people who were born into it, had children who were born into it, they died, the children, and they died. And so the population of North Korea, in terms of what the North Korean government wants them to believe or not believe, is almost fully institutionalized, thus extremely controllable. That's the almost extreme case of institutionalized information control.
Right. Very Orwellian dystopian sort of situation.
The United States does not have the ability to operate at that breadth of scope. But with respect to the ET issue, the U.S. was highly motivated, and it did manage to institutionalize this issue. So even after the Cold War ended in 91, thereabouts, the truth embargo continued on. And while it's been under assault and weakened, and it's breaking and cracking around the edges, technically it's still in place because the government still has not acknowledged the ET process.
Well, surely over the years we've not only figured out their technology, like you were saying, but we figured out some of their intention.
Maybe. The technology, yes. There's no question they've been studying the tech from the crash vehicles for 70 years, and there's some evidence that they have made progress there. I feel pretty good that they've got anti-gravitic craft. There's been witnesses to that. There's been testimony to that. They've had all the money they could possibly want, complete free reign. Almost all of this work is done in underground facilities. But the energy is a little more complicated because it's harder to know. So let's say they've perfected the energy systems that those craft use. Unless those systems are operating in plain sight, we just don't know.
Right.
We only know that they've done everything they can to do it. And there's a fair chance that they have mastered it, or are close to mastering it. And so the two major technologies for anti-gravitic propulsion and the alien energy or ET energy system are the two things we're most interested in. And there's no question that those technologies in whatever form they currently exist are not available to the world's people.
Right, but you know, it seems like over 70 years, like initially we repressed the truth out of fear of the unknown, of what they were, what they wanted, and how we would interact together. But after 70 years, do we have any closer idea of their intent?
Right. The alien, yeah, that's the other part of your question, the extraterrestrial agenda.
Right.
And if there has been direct communication between elements of government and extraterrestrials, then I think it's fair to say that they know more about the extraterrestrial agenda than perhaps we do.
So we don't actually know if that relationship is going on.
No, we don't. We don't. It hasn't been proven.
I see.
So if it hasn't been, then they don't know any more than perhaps we do. I mean, the citizen science research effort has learned a lot. And a lot of that comes from contactees. I mean, that was a major change. And obviously a major problem for the truth embargo when contactees started coming out. And we had a sort of an extraterrestrial Me Too thing developed, started back in the early 80s, and has, of course, continued to grow. Large numbers of contactees have come forth. And they have a lot said about what they have seen and heard, and so forth. And from that, we've gathered some sense of what that agenda is, but it's not as comprehensive or as accurate as it would be if this was a completely out in the open, fully funded effort to understand this. The Citizen Science Research Activist Movement has been utterly without money of any substance at all for the entire time. It is basically people trying to get to the truth and force the government to tell the truth out of their own pocket. The institutionalized truth embargo, the humiliation of the issue, the ghettoizing of the issue is prevented, with a few exceptions. All of the very wealthy researchers, businessmen, scientists, wealthy philanthropists and philanthropic organizations to prevent them from getting involved. And they, so they're all part of the truth embargo. All the colleges are part of the truth embargo in the sense they've gone along with the institutionalized embargo forever. So we have some idea, but one of the things everybody wants to know is why are they here? And that's a pretty important question.
Well, this seems like a great time. It seems like a great time. We're coming up on our last commercial break with you. You're listening to Stephen Bassett here on Radio Wasteland. Stick around.
One of the most important tenets of your life is ensuring that your loved ones are cared for even after you're gone. Having a will is important, but can be bogged down in probate court for years. What are your options? Douglas Wright, attorney at law, specializes in estate planning and probate matters. Does a living trust solve all your legal concerns? Douglas Wright will guide you through the many legal aspects of planning for your future and the future of your loved ones. Douglas Wright Law, a professional corporation, 530-243-6000 or Douglas Wright Law.
As gun laws continue to tighten up across the country, Bastiani Arms will continue to provide our community with quality firearms, hard-to-find ammo, off-list fully built AR lower receivers, and the absolute best customer service. Get out of the grab-and-go box stores and come talk to a knowledgeable firearm specialist. The good guys at Bastiani Arms are real gun enthusiasts with two full-time gunsmiths on hand 5 days a week. Right now, Bastiani Arms is stocked up on hard-to-find ammo, 30-30, 38 Special, and 44 Magnum. More people than ever are exercising their rights to conceal and carry a firearm. Seth Stoke has over 20 years' experience in firearms and offers CCW classes, women-only CCW classes, and hunter education. Bastiani Arms has everything you need for firearms, and they appreciate you shopping local. Bastiani Arms, on the corner of Larkspur Lane and Wall Street in Reading. Join the revolution.
This is Carl in the Bot, and there is only one place you will find a new Sleep Number dual temp layer bed. That's right, Sleep Number in Reading. Be sure to go in and see them in a Target shopping center next to the Vitamin Shop. My Sleep Number is 40, and I feel great.
Right now they're making room, so go in and receive huge savings on all Sleep Number memory foam and I-Series bed sets. My Sleep Number is 55. Go find yours today. Sleep Number in the Target Center next to the Vitamin Shop.
This Chamber of Commerce Minute is brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning.
Becoming a member of the Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce is probably the smartest investment a local business can make. It would be impossible for a company on its own to duplicate the benefits of a chamber membership in the areas of legislative advocacy, workforce development, and economic development, not to mention all of the networking opportunities and business seminars offered. Join a committee, become an ambassador, attend a networking event, then watch your investment in business take off. Join today by calling 225-4433 and get connected.
This moment's been brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, professional cleaning services, 221-5868. Why not get the best?
All right, welcome back to Radio Wasteland and our guest, Stephen Bassett. We are discussing disclosure, which we're going to focus on a little bit more now here through our last segment with you. So one thing that I've always been curious about, and I know that you probably don't have a definitive answer for this, but maybe you have some speculation. Does somebody like Donald Trump, when he gets elected, maybe we should go with somebody who's a lifelong politician. Trump's a little bit of an outlier. Does a politician, when they become elected, know about the cover-up prior to becoming president, or are they even informed, or is this something even the president is aware of?
Every person that runs for political office has access to all of the public information on this. Citizen science research. There have been thousands of books their web, what's now their websites, their journals. So there's a, there is a body of information in the public domain. It's available to anyone.
Right.
Now the government has dismissed this information as being of no value, as gone as far as to say there is no extraterrestrial presence or any evidence for that at all, and so forth. But that information is there. In terms of what presidents may or may not be told by the military intelligence complex, which has now got a life of its own and has for some time, that is not fully known either. The person that has done the most to try to understand that is Grant Cameron. His website, presidentialufo.com, was built up for years based upon his visiting presidential libraries, doing research, and filing Freedom of Information Act requests. And it's probably the best we have in terms of understanding what presidents may or may not know. I can say that the early presidents were informed, certainly Truman, certainly Eisenhower. Kennedy is a mixed bag. It's hard to know there. It's kind of a tricky situation. Might have been given information, but he got off to a rather odd start. But he would have been briefed just before going in. So he might have been given some information, but they might have started to limit it at that point. It wouldn't surprise me. Nixon, I think, was given some information, had some sense of it. How much, we don't know. And then as you go forward, it's just less and less and less. Now, for by and large, for some time, the presidents are not briefed on this. The Congress is not kept apprised of it. These are what we call unacknowledged special access programs. They're deep black. The ET issue is run down there, and you can't get to it.
So we're talking like generals. No.
I'm sorry?
So we're talking like generals know this, or who does?
Whoever is managing the program.
Interesting.
We don't know who manages it. There are probably, and there are committees, I call it cross-agency committees, that deal with it. It's deep, and the penalties for violating any security matters in that area would be severe. So exactly what kinds of people, whether there are any generals, whether it's just intelligence officers, we don't know.
So what about like Hillary Clinton and a few other politicians that were running kind of alluded to their willingness to look into it? You think that was just chasing votes, or you think they knew something?
No, that was PRG's political initiative, that started in 1994. I don't have time to get into it, but you go to paradigmresearchgroup.org and look under projects and find the 2016 election initiative. You will see what PRG was doing between mid-2013 and the election of 2016. I was able to generate hundreds and hundreds of articles about the connection between the ET issue and President candidate Clinton. And it almost triggered a major breakout in the media that would have led to disclosure pretty quickly. There's a contribution that PRG made to this process.
We don't have too much more time, but what do you think disclosure will look like, and what do you think the response will be? I realize you don't have a direct answer for this, but I'm sure you've speculated.
Well, disclosure is defined carefully in the advocacy movement. It's capital B, and it's the announcement by heads of state. That's what it is, nothing else. A small D disclosure can be any number of things, but disclosure will be announced by the head of state. It will come probably a little without warning. I don't think there'll be the people in the know, perhaps like myself and some others, may sort of sense it's close, but the vast majority of people will have no idea. It'll completely blindside them. And that announcement will come out. It'll almost certainly be a single head of state. I doubt there will be any cooperation or coordination. But very quickly after that, other heads of state will follow. They're not going to stand on the sidelines and play deaf and dumb. They're going to follow, and you'll have, in short order, essentially what amounts to a global acknowledgement.
So you don't think it's going to be premeditated disclosure? You think one guy's going to break, and it's going to come out, and everybody else is going to have to fall in line?
Oh, it's premeditated. I mean, I'm just saying that one nation, the head of state of one nation will decide, I'm going to do it. This is time. I'm going to do it. And they're going to do that. And then the others will have much no choice but to follow, whether they wanted to or not. A lot of them will be thrilled to follow. In other words, finally, we can speak to this.
Right.
And we'll be in the post-disclosure world. And that is going to be a very, let's just say, interesting time. And we could spend days and weeks discussing the possibilities in that time.
I was
but the world will be guided up at that point. PD. Post-disclosure and, before disclosure, BD, and after disclosure, AD.
I always felt that disclosure was going to come on the heels of an admission of discovering microbial life, that it was going to be premeditated on that level, because I really feel like we're sort of on the brink of possibly finding that within our solar system.
Oh, we've already found it, trust me.
Well, I mean, publicly,
Everything you have been told by the government about what they know, it's like 10, 15 years behind where they actually are. This is part of a game. But, there are those in there that want to stretch this out as long as possible. They'd like to make a first announcement about microbial life, and that, because that's so safe. It's not really so disruptive.
Right.
But unfortunately for them, the citizen science activist movement has just made too much progress. It's gone far enough that nobody is going to buy that nonsense. Meaning, oh, you mean there are microbes out there? Not on Earth? Oh, but there's no ET presence now. All the other evidence doesn't mean anything. Now, so that opportunity is gone. It's not going to come. They may make that announcement, and that's fine. And if they do, if they were to announce that they have confirmed the presence of life on another planet, one of these exoplanets, that would be pretty impressive. It would be a big day. But it would accelerate the disclosure process on the ET presence substantially. It would give a lot of gravitas and credibility to all of the people that are pushing that, and just make it even harder for the truth embargo to hold. So that's one of the reasons they might have been holding off on that, because they know that we're not going to settle for that. They've kind of held off on that. They've held off on what they know about water on Mars. The NASA's been compromised to death. Poor NASA. I feel so bad for it. We now, American people and many other citizens of other nations, literally today, sail in a ship of lies on an ocean of secrecy.
Well, I like that line a lot. Unfortunately, we're here at the end of the show. Can you remind our listeners a little bit of how they can find out more about you, the Paradigm Research Group, and disclosure in general?
You got to spell Paradigm correctly. It's PARADIGM. Some people say Paradigm. ParadigmResearchGroup.org. Everything about what I do and have done is all there and a lot more, with links to other sites and so forth. So ParadigmResearchGroup.org. You can sign up for the update list there. If you want to contribute, well, naturally there's a contribution section.
Well, great. I really appreciate you being on the show, Stephen. It's been very enlightening, very awesome to really address disclosure. We haven't done that yet. So you've been listening to Stephen Bassett here on Radio Wasteland. Don't forget, ParadigmResearchGroup.org. Check us out next week. Swing. So nothing.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding. Tobacco and Brew, open 7 days a week.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Val Dior. The Senate has agreed to officially begin debate on a bill to overhaul the immigration system. The Senate needed 60 votes to succeed and got 97. Only one senator voted against it, and that was Ted Cruz. The Senate can now begin the process of crafting a bill that is expected to include a legislative fix for so-called Dreamers, and the process could take several weeks. President Trump today unveiled his $4.4 trillion budget proposal for 2000.